Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Quincy on the Law. My name is Quincy, and we're here for another episode of Quincy on the Law. Today's topic is the expert witness. I want us, in brief, to look at who an expert witness is, what is the need for an expert witness, what is the statutory basis for an expert witness, what is the probative value of the evidence of an expert witness. So, under the Evidence Act of Kenya, Section 48, it states that when the court has to form an opinion upon a point of foreign law, or of science or art, or as to the identity or genuineness of handwriting or finger or other impressions, opinions upon that point are admissible if made by persons specially skilled in such foreign law, science or art, or questions as to identity or genuineness of handwriting or finger or other impressions, such persons are called experts. So according to the 10th edition of the Black's Law Dictionary, the 10th is the latest, it defines an expert witness as a witness qualified by knowledge, skill, experience, training, or education to provide a scientific, technical, or other specialized opinion about the evidence or a fact in issue. As such, the role of an expert witness is to assist the court to understand the evidence before it determines any fact in issue. And the experts do so by giving their opinion on matters that are foreign to the court. For a person to be an expert, he or she must first be shown to be competent. He or she must have a special study of the subject or have long experience on the subject matter. He or she must have acquired special experience, as the value of the evidence of an expert will be enhanced or depreciated according to the number of years they have practiced. The court has to be satisfied that the person before it is an expert and that the matter before it requires expert evidence. So first, the next matter will be the qualification of an expert witness. The issue of qualification of an expert witness has raised controversy as to whether academic qualification or practical acquaintance can render one as an expert. However, the courts have settled that either of the two is sufficient to constitute one as an expert. Case in point, the case of Gatheru and Jaguara versus the Republic. In this case, the accused was charged with unlawful possession of a firearm. A police officer gave evidence where he simply described himself as an inspector of police attached to the CID at Nanyuki. He did not tell the court how long he had perfected his duties, whether he had seen or examined any handmade weapons other than those seized in the course of the operation, which led to the arrest of the defendant. The matter was taken up on appeal, and the issue on appeal was whether the opinion evidence of such a witness was admissible as an expert expert evidence. The nine judges observed that expert skill is not confined to knowledge acquired academically, but will also include skills acquired by practical experience. It may well be that in the present circumstances in Kenya, a police officer employed on operational or investigation work acquires sufficient practical knowledge so as to qualify him to speak as an expert. Now, when it comes to opinion evidence, the general rule is that oral evidence should be direct evidence and witnesses should only testify on the facts that they perceive with their five senses and not give any personal opinions. Opinion evidence is an inference or conclusion that a witness draws from matters perceived. The general rule is that opinion evidence is inadmissible. The rationale is that, under common law, it is the work of the judge to draw out conclusion from the facts and not the witnesses. However, this rule is subject to two exceptions. The first exception is expert witness evidence. An expert properly qualified may state his opinion on a matter calling for expertise which he possesses. This exception acknowledges the fact that in some cases, absent opinion evidence, a court may be unable to reach a conclusion based on the evidence of the record. In Kenyan jurisprudence, the exceptions under the expert evidence include opinions as to handwriting, customs and rights, relationship as to persons, body of law, or conduct of a charitable or religious organizations. Expert witnesses assist the court to come up with a proper conclusion based on the evidence adduced by the expert witness. This happens in situations where Without the assistance of an expert witness, the common mind can't draw a proper conclusion on the matter at hand. If you can look at the landmark English case of Davy versus Magistrates of Edinburgh, it provides that where a witness has particular skills in an area being examined by the court, and he or she has been called to give evidence on the matter, the witness should give the evidence on that area in order to help the court come up with a proper conclusion on the matter. He or she could furnish the court with the necessary scientific criteria, which will assist the court in coming to a conclusion on the matter. The other objective is that expert testimony helps to support the facts or evidence adduced by other witnesses in the court, especially where the expert witness is directly involved in the case at hand. In Kenya, Sections 48 to 54 of the Evidence Act cover the admissibility of an expert witness. Section 48 states that when the court has to form an opinion upon a point of foreign law or of science or art, or as to the identity or genuineness of handwriting or fingerprint or other impressions, such opinions are admissible if made by persons specially skilled in that area. Now, when it comes to the courtroom setting, the evidence of an expert witness can only be rebutted by another expert witness. What is the probative value that we should give to the evidence of an expert witness? Now, in the case of Stephen Kinini Wangondu versus the Arc Limited, 2016, the High Court laid out the criteria that a court ought to use in weighing the probative value of expert evidence. While there are numerous authorities asserting that expert evidence can only be challenged by another expert, little has been said regarding the criteria a court should use to weigh the probative value of expert evidence. This is because, while expert evidence is important evidence, it is nevertheless merely part of the evidence which a court has to take into account. Firstly, expert evidence does not trump all other evidence. It is axiomatic that judges are entitled to disagree with an expert witness. Expert evidence should be tested against known facts, as it is the primary factual evidence which is of the greatest importance. It is therefore necessary to ensure that expert evidence is not elevated into a fixed framework or formula against which actions are then to be rigidly judged with a mathematical precision. Secondly, a judge must not consider expert evidence in a vacuum. It should not therefore be artificially separated from the rest of the evidence. To do so is a structural failing. A court's findings will often derive from an interaction of its views on the factual and expert evidence taken together. The more persuasive elements of the factual evidence will assist the court in forming its views on the expert testimony and vice versa. For example, expert evidence can provide a framework for the consideration of other evidence. Thirdly, where there is conflicting expert opinion, a judge should test it against the background of all other evidence in the case, which they accept in order to decide which expert evidence is to be preferred. Fourthly, a judge should consider all the evidence in the case, including that of the experts, before making any findings of fact, even provisional ones. A further criteria for assessing an expert's evidence focuses on the quality of the expert's reasoning. A court should examine each expert's testimony in terms of its rationality and internal consistency in relation to all the evidence presented. A court should not therefore allow an expert to merely present their conclusion without also presenting the analytical process by which they reach that conclusion. Where there is a conflict between experts on a fundamental point, it is the court's task to justify its preference for one over the other by an analysis of the underlying material and of their reasoning. So with that, let's wrap up today's episode. So ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening in. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Quincy, and this is Quincy on the Law. Please subscribe for more.